Welcome to the Radio Today program.
The Radio Today program with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionic Studio, the smarter way to make radio.
This is Roy Martin in for Stuart Clarkson once again. Stuart is having it off this week, so we will crack on with a couple of features we got lined up for you and hope and pray that he comes back and takes over the task of putting this podcast together every week very soon. Later on the pod, we've got a special feature from the Radio Academy. They were celebrating last week. All this month, in fact, they're celebrating Women in Radio and Audio as a way of marking International Women's Day. They've got a series of 6 lunchtime events throughout spring with loads of great guests, and they've just had their launch, which was last week, focusing on women in leadership, hosted by Helen Thomas, the boss of BBC Radio 2, of course, and the chair of the Radio Academy. We'll have a roundup of some of the big talking points on how to be successful and make an impact in audio and radio with Laura Rowlings, the series producer. She's coming up a little bit later on.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Macassoy.
But first, we've got a special guest on this week's programme in the form of Simon Ross.
You've got the Rossi Show.
Uh-huh. Pete Snodden is your guest host this week. Thank you, Pete, for coming on and holding the fort, as it were. When I heard Simon Ross was being interviewed by Pete on this podcast, not only was I delighted, but I had to dig out some of the old drops I had from his show on Rock FM in the 90s.
Simon Ross's Music Powered Half Hour.
And if you're wondering, that's the voice of JJ McKay, who was the voice of the station back then. Anyway, we'll crack on and hand over to Pete, who's talking to Simon about his journey from radio in Northern Ireland to Australia and then on to England. They discuss regional accents on national radio and whether the person in between the songs is more important than ever.
Thank you, Roy. It's great to be here on the Radio Today programme. So, I'm sure you can tell from my accent that I'm from Northern Ireland. But don't worry, there'll be no talk of Brexit, the Irish Sea border, or the Northern Ireland Protocol. I can assure you of that. You can find me each morning presenting the Cool FM Breakfast Show across Northern Ireland alongside Paolo and Rebecca. Now, Stuart Clarkson is normally the man asking the questions on this podcast. I'm a big fan, but as Stuart takes a break, I'm delighted to be here and asking the questions on this episode. My guest is someone who I've admired on air for many years, someone who has become a great friend through the medium that we both love, radio. Over the next 30 minutes, I'm in conversation with Simon Ross from Greatest Hits Radio. Rossy, dear boy, how the heck are you?
I am absolutely wonderful, Pete. Absolutely wonderful and great to catch up with you.
Mate, you know what? We've just finished our shows this morning and it's nice just to sort of decompress after doing the show. How are you finding broadcasting through the pandemic?
Do you know what? I've totally got used to it. It was a bit bizarre. You know, where we're situated in the tower in Liverpool, and It became almost like a ghost ship. And at one stage, I was flying completely solo. Producer Al had got some symptoms earlier on, and he had to stay at home and was doing everything remotely. And that was a little bit odd and a little bit weird. We were talking about this only yesterday. It'll probably seem just as weird when everybody returns eventually to the building. And hopefully that's sooner rather than later.
Yeah, very true, very true. And it's the same for us. We were a bit flat this morning on air, just because, you know, keeping everyone on that up trajectory all the time is quite difficult. And I'm sure if you're listening to this now and you're doing a show, you probably have days like that yourself. Anyhow, listen, we first met in Radio City Tower many, many years ago. You were very kind to take me on a tour. It still is for me one of the best places to have a radio studio looking out over the Mersey. You've been there a long time, albeit through Radio City, Radio City 2, now Greatest Hits Radio. Are you still enjoying broadcasting from there?
Absolutely. It's going to be 16 years, actually, since I moved here from Radio Air in Leeds back in 2005. And you never, ever take the views for granted. May it be a cold, wet day, maybe a cloudy day or a really bright summer's day, the views are always amazing. And that will sort of lift you a little bit as well. If you're having one of the days you just mentioned, if you come and have a browse outside, see Liverpool and the world waking up. And that sort of gives you a little bit of a kickstart at times as well.
Now, I want to get on to Greatest Hits and chat about where you are now and what you're doing and the difference between being a regional broadcaster and a national broadcaster. But I want to start in Northern Ireland. I don't know how many people know, unless they're friends with you, that you're from Northern Ireland, because with your accent, with all due respect, you would never know.
I guess when I do go home and I come from a place called Armagh, I do get the occasional comment, would you listen to your English man there, for God's sake?
When you left here, what year was it?
Oh, I left Northern Ireland. It was the beginning of 1986. Here comes my my sad old memory for dates and details. The 9th of January, 1986, just before my 19th birthday, I left to pursue my career as a chef. And at the time, I was also DJing in discos and clubs and stuff like that across Northern Ireland and across over the border in places like Monaghan and Castleblayney and areas like that. So I was doing a little bit of DJing, but I never thought I had what it took to get into radio. But I used to listen to a lot of radio, like Downtown Radio before the birth of Cool FM in 89. And obviously Radio 1 was big, RTE, Radio Luxembourg, of course, used to listen to nighttime radio. And that was all very inspirational.
So what made you, obviously you spent some time in Australia, you were chefing. What made you decide to give radio a go? How did that first step actually happen? Because we all have a story. I know obviously you can be on the Radio Today website and see a job advertised. They're few and far between. So everyone's got a story about how they get in. And generally it's like someone didn't turn up and you were in the right place at the right time and you give it a go. And that was the rest, as they say, is history. What was your story?
Well, before I moved to Australia in November 1988, I was doing hospital radio in a hospital called Radio St. Stephen's, which I don't think exists now. And I was sort of given a little bit of free rein within reason, and I was allowed to progress at my own rate, and it was good. And then I moved out to Melbourne, and I became really good friends with a very, very good broadcaster from Australia, a guy called Mike Hammond, who's very well known out there in telly and radio, etc. And he showed me the sort of ways and gave me some tips and heads up, etc., and really helped me out. And then I got a job working at a tiny little radio station called 3PBS FM, which had a different breakfast show every morning. And their only golden rule was you weren't allowed to play anything from the Australian chart. It all had to be kind of indie or out there, or stuff that hadn't been sort of heard before. So I used to play a load of stuff that was successful in the UK but hadn't made it in Australia. So I became a little bit of a revelation each Thursday morning on the 3PBS breakfast show. And that also gave me a lot of experience as well. And then on my return, I continued back at the hospital radio station. I was sending demo after demo. I've got rejection after rejection. Most of them really nice. Couple could have been a little bit more diplomatic, but however, you take the rough with the smooth. And eventually I sent a demo tape out, and I got an offer from Radio HMV in London, Radio Top Shop, which was then known as the Fashion Network. I got a call from your boss at Cool FM, and a call from Radio Luxembourg on the strength of one demo. And with that, I did HMV and Top Shop for a good 8 months.
Wow. Okay. I mean, there's so much in there. Rejection after rejection is what we've all been through. And I don't think, as much as we would say to anyone who's looking to get into the business, you know, rejection, you learn from it. It's still hard to take.
Yeah, especially when I was really desperate to get that first break. And a rejection in itself, even put really nicely and politely and diplomatically, is hard to take, as you just said. But when it's a rejection with unnecessary barbed comments in the letter that you'd get back, it's like, wow, am I really as bad as this person's telling me I am? I mean, like, you know, it's almost like give up on your dream. And I don't think that's ever helpful in any way whatsoever. Got only a couple of those, but I remember every one of them.
Are you a person that needs to have someone to keep building you up, or do you have a real good sense of who you are, what you stand for, and just how good you are?
What I need is someone to nip and tuck me along the way. And I get that. We have a morning catch up. Myself, producer Al, and my big boss, Andy Ashton, has a catch up each and every morning. And you know, he will say this at 7:15 was a little bit long, that you could have gone into it. And he nips and tucks. And anything and anybody who makes me a better broadcaster and a better presenter and a jock will always get the thumbs up from me. And certainly over the last 2.5 years, I've been working with Andy, that has certainly been the case. So I don't need anyone to butter my ego and tell me that I'm great. Equally, I don't like getting severe bollockings. And to be fair, I think I've only had one from Andy in the last 2.5 years. But just to be pointed in the right direction. And because radio is like my former trade, I was a chef, you never stop learning. And it changes all the time. And if you think you know it all in radio, well, yeah, guess what? I've got news for you. You don't.
Whenever you got the gig at Capital, that must have felt really, really big.
Yeah, I'd been down to see the bosses at Capital quite a few times. And it got to the stage where when I got the call, that was the call to offer me the job, I went, listen, forget about it. You know, you've sort of tempted me, you know, on more than several occasions. And I'd got to that state, and it was Clive Dickens who actually said, no, this isn't a come down and chat. This is a job offer. Have you got time to talk? And I went, really? He says, yeah, we've got a gig for you. And we had that chat and I took it straight away.
You were on before Tarrant, and at that stage, Tarrant ruled London. Whenever it was building up to his show in the morning, did you feel an additional pressure?
I actually started doing a dance show at the weekend, The Beat Goes On with Simon Ross, and the Sunday Super Hits. And then I did cover. And then they started a digital station called Life. And the guy that was doing the early breakfast, Paul Fear, dear friend of mine, moved on to Life. And they thought the digital thing was going to take off a lot quicker than it actually did. And as a result, I was asked to cover the early breakfast show, 4 till 6 a.m. And I jumped at the chance at that. Of course, I enjoyed every bit of it. Yeah, there was a sense as it got sort of like to 5:30, 5:45. Yeah, the main man, Tarrant, was on the air in 15 minutes time. And yeah, you could see the phone lines getting a little bit busier. There wasn't much in by way of text. If we had at all a text machine back then, I don't think we had. But you'd certainly got that sense. London was waking up, and it was waking up with Chris Tarrant back in the day.
For someone like me who's never worked in London or worked in a national station, and obviously Capital was regional then at the time. It wasn't right across the entire UK, but you struck up a relationship with Chris Moyles back then. You would have met up. He was an early breakfast in Radio 1 and whatnot. Was it a friendly environment working in the radio industry in London?
Well, it certainly was. Although, I'm going to tell you this. The first time I met Chris Moyles, I'd been out hosting an event all day. And with that, there was drinks afterwards. So when I went to meet him and John Coleshaw, Moyles, he absolutely hated me. Hated me. I was drunk, but I was just being, you know, I was just being boisterous. And he phoned a load of mutual friends the day after and said, I just met that Simon Ross yesterday. I God, he was drunk and he was telling rude jokes and he was doing this, he was doing that. And everybody spoke to went, Rossi's one of the nicest guys. Well, they were saying it. I'm not saying it. They were saying it. And he, when I bumped into him again, because we drank in the same local pub as by chance, the Haverstock Arms. And he goes, you know something, I tried to really dislike you, but everyone I spoke to about you really sang your praises, so I can't even dislike you. We became really good friends after that. In fact, I seen the Millennium at Moyles' house when we went from 99 into 2000. We had a house party around there, and that was a great event.
So Capital came and went, and then you were in the EMAP bar, as we are now, Rock, Air, City. Your time at Radio City was interesting because that's whenever we first met. And at that stage, you were doing mid-morning. Kev was still on breakfast at the time. You were doing Rossi Rewind on a Sunday. At that particular stage, I remember having chats with you. And I never thought at that point that you would have ended up going on to do the breakfast thing. I thought you were really, really settled where you were. And I actually didn't think at that point personally that you had any... You didn't feel that breakfast was the place for you or whatever. I didn't think that you, at that stage you had the drive to do breakfast or that you wanted to do it. How did that come about?
It wasn't that I didn't have the drive to do breakfast. I didn't really, really want, you know, like some people really want something. I was really happy in mid-mornings, 10 to 1, Monday to Friday. As you say, the rewind on a Sunday. Ratings were great and everything else. So they used to use other guys to cover Kev. And then after a couple of years, they asked me would I cover the breakfast show when Kev was on holidays, et cetera, et cetera. And I got a little bit of a bug for it because getting out of bed in the morning isn't really an issue for me. And when they put it to me about taking over the breakfast show, I didn't want to because of circumstances that I'll probably not go into now. But I said no. I said, if things change somewhere down the line, then I would gladly. But under the circumstances that they were making the change, I wasn't really interested. Eventually, I was told, well, if you don't do it, somebody else will, kind of thing. So, you know, it's there. And I took over the breakfast show. Had a decent run, to be honest. I took over what was a well-established breakfast show and a heritage radio station. So you're always going to get that dip in ratings. And, you know, you're talking about hard to take rejection letters and comments. That was a bit hard. But within 18 months to 2 years, we were at a five-year high at breakfast on Radio City. And, you know, I found my feet and I nipped and tuck all the way along. Richard Maddock was my boss back in the day. And we used to have regular catch-ups and snoops. And I had some really, really good producers there as well. And the likes of Jay Hind and Liesl, who works over at Hallam. John O'Simmons produced breakfast as well, right up until the time I left. So really good people working with me as well that helped me along the way.
Radio City 2 came and then we're at greatest hits now. And that's what I really want to get into because it's really exciting. It must be really exciting being on that station. You see the billboards everywhere. They're in buses all over the shop. There's FM in London coming very, very shortly. And to be on that platform mentally, going from being on a regional station to being on a network, a national, how did that make you feel? Were you nervous about that? What was your sort of thought process?
Well, the move from City to Radio City 2 was, again, another revelation. That really took flight quickly, quicker than I think any of the bosses had anticipated. Mike Cass, who was an absolute radio programming legend.
I've got a good rejection letter from Mike Cass from his time at Galaxy.
I'm sure Mike was very, very kind and constructive because that's the kind of guy he is. Although I never had a snoop with him, but I've heard about snoops with Mike Cass and his post-it stickers all over the whiteboard. But you know what? Mike and I got on very well. I only worked with him for a very, very short time. And he spoke to me about this Radio City 2 and this change and would I be prepared to move, etc. And they were crossing over, obviously taking Radio City Talk off FM, putting it onto AM, and then swapping what was magic onto 105.8 FM in Liverpool. And I said, yeah, that sounded great. And the breakfast show did happen. And we kicked off with, I think it was the Beatles Revolution. And that was great. And as a result of its success, I think that's how Greatest Hits Radio became born.
Whenever it comes to going national, and when you have been really well known in Liverpool, did you feel that you had to de-Liverpudlian yourself, if that makes sense? I mean, I remember whenever you were doing that breakfast show and whatnot and you had all the snippets of Is Right Rossi La and all that sort of stuff. Was that something that you felt you had to just get rid of?
Well, here I am sitting in the same studio where I'd been working for years and years and years, looking out at the Albert Dock, but not referring to Liverpool. And not referring to City at all. I had to completely distance myself. I was now national, and it was a radio station called Greatest Hits Radio with no mention of City, Radio City, or Radio City 2 in there.
Yeah, that must be difficult.
I had to concentrate really hard for the first couple of weeks. That is true. I mean, you know, it was really tough not to sit here. I'm sitting talking to you now and I'm looking down and say out at the Mersey, the Albert Dock, there's a ferry going across the Mersey. But I couldn't make any reference to that, which I used to sort of capitalize on quite a bit and sort of talk about my views when I was talking solely to Liverpool back in the Radio City, I'd say Radio City 2 days. So, yeah, you definitely had to concentrate hard and in order not to refer back to where you were broadcasting from, so to speak.
It must excite you with what's going on at the station. I mean, Simon Mayo joining for Drive Time very, very soon. Lots of investment in the station. It must please you as well whenever you hear on this podcast that Dee Ford, when she wakes up in the morning, listens to Greatest Hits Radio.
Yeah, that was very pleasing to know because, well, Dee has got a lot of radio stations and a lot with a lot of heritage as well. So I think it's more the music thing than me, to be perfectly honest, the 70s, 80s and 90s. But when I heard that on the podcast, I must admit I did smile to myself and said, great choice, Dee Ford, MBE.
What about your motivating factors? What keeps you motivated? Because, like, you know, I'm not saying you're old, mate, by any stretch of the imagination. It should be celebrated, the length of career that you've had, and you'll continue to do that. But having done breakfast myself for the guts of 15 years or whatever, getting up at 4 a.m, you say it comes easy, but it never gets any easier.
Getting out of bed's the hard bit, right? So nobody likes getting out of bed. But when my feet touch the bedroom floor, I'm as good as up. And I've got a routine, straight in, vitamins, glass of water with fresh lemon juice, gulp. Brush my teeth, get myself washed and clean, product in the hair, get dressed. One cup of black coffee, car, I'm in work for 5 o'clock. By the time 6 o'clock comes, I'll have been awake for 2 hours. So I'm ready to take on the world. And I stick to that routine and I'm really stringent about, you know, keeping to that 4, 10 past 4, getting out of bed. So my head, my brain and my voice is totally awake come 6.
I do admire you for that. I don't know for anyone else who does breakfast who's listening to this right now. I mean, for me personally, I rock in here at 10 to 6. Now, I'm well prepared. But that's just part of my sort of, that's me. I'm up, I'm at it at home. I'll spend more time at home and then I'll get in here 10 to 6 on air at 6 o'clock, ready to go for the day because I've done my prep either the night before, first thing when I get up or whatever. But you're stringent with getting yourself into work for 5 a.m. every morning.
Yeah, Friday mornings is my sleep-in morning and I set my alarm for 4:30, which is weird. But I get in about 5:20 on a Friday. But, you know, I'm going to be honest with you, I don't even like doing that. I would, I just prefer to get in really at 6 o'clock. You know, there's nothing left to do is just open the mic and do the show. The prep is done. The features are in place. The music, of course, is programmed. And it's just me. And as I said, my head's awake, my voice is awake and I'm fresh-ish.
Something we touched on earlier, being from Armagh, and I said to you that, you know, many people, maybe it's different in England, but certainly you come home or when you would hear you on the radio, I wouldn't immediately think of you being from our part of the world, which you are. But when it comes to your accent, because there's a big thing going on right now about diversity, and that spans a whole lot of things. But when it comes to accents and regional accents on national radio, what would you say to anybody who's trying to make that jump? Do you think the accent, no matter where you're from, do you think it matters? Do you think that you have to think about changing your accent, slowing down how you're speaking? Did you feel that you had to change?
I never did. And as far as accents go, it doesn't matter. I don't think one single bit. I think as long as you're clear and concise, it doesn't matter where your accent is from or how it sounds. Obviously, you need a bit of clarity. And that sort of comes with that comes with the trade. That comes part and parcel of what you need to be involved in radio. You have to be clear. But the accent bit, I don't think is really that important. I think regional accents, non-regional accents, as long as you're clear and what you're delivering makes sense, how your accents sound, I don't think it's that important.
Radio now compared to radio when you started, my goodness, it's a total different landscape right now. And obviously the viability of radio it has changed somewhat because of streaming and people being able to have music on demand. Do you believe, I'll tell you what I believe. I believe that the people between the records now are more important than they've ever been in terms of radio going forward and making radio something that people will switch on to and give a point of difference than just listening to wall-to-wall music that you can do online. Would you agree with that?
To an extent, I certainly would agree. I again, getting back to what I just said about accents before, I think you do have to be a little bit more disciplined these days and concise and know exactly where you're going. I know in my early stages when I got comfortable in commercial radio, I could have opened the mic and waffled that little bit longer. We got away with a lot more in the 1990s than we would do now. But yes, what you say, how you say it, how you deliver it is important, is really, really important. And yes, it really, truly is. If you're going to just have like loads and loads and loads of music in a row, when you're popping up and saying what you got to say, it's got to land well.
You're the fact man when it comes to your broadcasting. I mean, you just have to listen to your show. You know every release date, every year, every album. You've listened to every album. You know all the songs. How much of that is truly just you being a music fan as you are? Or how much research do you have to put into what you broadcast every single day? Because it is very fact-based and it is going back through time. And I tell you what, I'm sure your audience will be quick to pull you up if you make a mistake.
Oh yes, definitely, absolutely. Yeah, if I do say something that is not factually correct, the text will come in thick and fast, pointing out, nope, it wasn't that year, nope, such and such didn't do backing vocals in that song. The thing is, as I get through life, I associate everything with what was in the charts at that particular time, and that's how I can recall a lot of the stuff from the decades that we specialize in, the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And I can recall charts and numbers and this and that and the other. But if I put a pizza in the oven and it's supposed to be there for 20 minutes, I'll probably remember after an hour and 20 minutes, if you know what I mean. So it's just one of those things. I can recall times of my life listening to the radio, buying records, buying albums like we used to, and that's how I can work out times and dates and facts and figures, etc.
I gotta tell you, I miss those days. I miss the record. I know you can still go and buy vinyl and stuff, but I do miss the record shop experience. I miss the friendships that you would have made going to the record store. I think, and not to sound old hat in any shape or form, but I think that there's an awful lot missed by streaming your music.
I think the whole experience, now you're a fair bit younger than me, but the whole experience of going to a record shop on a Saturday afternoon and buying an album that you'd saved up your pocket money for, or getting a bargain in the bargain bucket, which was brilliant. Oh, I used to love it. Oh, my giddy aunt, I've got this single for 50p. It should have been £1.20. So, you know, kids today will never really have that brilliant experience that I have fond memories of. I used to go into record shops and not buy anything, just have that look around. It was like, it's like today, going to the pub, socializing with your mates and having a pint. But it's funny that I was talking to my daughter, Nancy, who's 14, and I mentioned that I worked in Bond Street. She said she loved Bond Street in London. And I said, an HMV. And she went, oh, isn't that a prison? I said, no, that's HMP, Nancy. That's HMP. HMV is a record store. Oh, yeah. I think I've heard of that. And it's like, wow. You know, wow, how can you be so blasé about something that meant so much to us as teenagers back in the 70s and the 80s?
Nancy's 14. I remember being at her christening and seeing her pictures on Instagram and whatnot. She's grown into a very beautiful young woman. If she came to you and said, Dad, I want to be a radio presenter, what would you say to her?
I'd say, don't listen to any of my old demo tapes. what would I say? I'd say, okay, well, what kind of presenter would you want to be? Who's the people that influence you currently? What kind of music do you like? Do you want to be a music presenter? Do you want to be a journalist? What is it you want to do? And then if I couldn't help, I would probably use my contacts and put her in touch with somebody that could help.
The reason why I say that is I bump into so many people who work in our industry who would tell people not to go anywhere near it now.
Certainly there's not as many jobs as there was when I certainly first got into it. I mean, when I started back in Rock FM, that was my first full proper ILR gig, if you like. And, you know, you had an overnight show, you had a breakfast show, mid-mornings, afternoons, drive, evening, late show, overnight, some places had early breakfasts. There's none of that now. So the opportunities are certainly not as great. But if you do get a job, then it's to hold, cherish, nourish, and really take care of.
And with that, Greatest Hits Radio, you're holding it, you're cherishing it. What are you doing with it right now?
well, as I say, get in the morning, get ready on air at 6. We've got our features in place that we do on a regular basis. And the thing about doing the same thing every day is making it sound slightly different. And just enjoying it and enjoying the music, which I do. I really do. Of all the years I've worked in radio, this has got to be the best set of tunes that I've ever played, 70s, 80s and 90s. It's just right up my street. Three wonderful decades that mean a lot to me personally. And judging by the audience and the feedback that you get, and I get a lot of feedback as well. The audience seem to like it too.
What's your relationship like with Al, your producer?
Wonderful guy. He's only very young. I think he was born in 1996. That guy's got a wealth of experience, got a very old head and young shoulders, that I've got to say that. He can turn his hand to just about everything. And he is an extension of my right arm, because you know what? I'm a technophobe. And without Al, I'd be lost without him. He's an incredible young man with a huge future in the radio industry, in my humble opinion, anyway.
Technophobe for someone who's pushed buttons all their days?
Oh, I've only got onto online banking in the last couple of months. But you know what? I'm going to be honest with you, Pete. I love going into the bank and talking to a human being. It's the same with supermarkets. I don't want to do that electronic checkout malarkey. And then you've got to wait if you're buying a can of beer or four cans. That you got to wait for someone to go and swipe something to verify you're over 18. Oh, no, I want to be starting talking to the man or woman behind the counter, the checkout. I want to be having a wee bit of banter, finding out a little bit about them and their day and how's life treating them. And that's, I miss that. I really do and well and truly miss all that.
What's next for Simon Ross?
I have no idea. I mean, I signed a contract just before Christmas here at Greatest Hits Radio. If I was told by someone from above, right, you're going to see out the rest of your career at Greatest Hits Radio, I'd say, well, thank you very much. I'll have that all day long. All I can do is wake up every morning, give it my best shot, which I try to do. I try to score hat tricks every day, if you want to use a football analogy. Not every day I score a hat trick, but I'll intend to try and do that at least each and every morning when I turn up and the show starts at 6.
And finally, for me, something I've learned in my time in radio is that you can focus so much on the future and what is next. But actually the most important thing in terms of getting to that next stage is actually just focusing on what you're doing now. And that could be quite difficult. Are you here and now? Are you in the moment?
Definitely. Absolutely. You've got to be in the moment. Yeah, obviously, you've got to think of the future a little bit, but for now, my job's the breakfast show on Greatest Hits Radio, and that's the number one thing that I've got to take care of as far as my job and career is. And yeah, I do take care of that on a day-to-day basis, because every show is a brand new day, and also brand new listeners hopefully tuning in every morning, and it's my job to make them stay.
Rossi, it's always great to chat. Thank you for telling us about your journey in radio so far, and I hope that journey continues long into the future.
Yeah, here's to a long and winding road down the avenue of greatest hits, my friend. Pete Snodden, it's always a pleasure to catch up with you.
Good man. Thanks, Rossi. Take care, mate.
God bless you.
Thank you, Pete. And thank you, Simon, as well. Great chat. Very interesting. More like that next week, but something completely different. Now, before we tell you about the Radio Academy's Women in Audio and Radio event last week, let me tell you about Clean Feed, because whether you're doing an OB, an interview, or co-hosting, Clean Feed is designed for radio and podcasters, and now it's simple to connect live audio over the web. The quality is fantastic, and you get to record it as well right in the browser. Clean Feed doesn't cost anything to get started, and you can find out more at cleanfeed.net.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionics Studio. Listening, watching, reacting to and learning from every spoken word, caller, tweet and SMS to unmix, unlock and understand your content. The Bionics Studio transforms everything about radio except the way you make it.
Significant strides have been made to increase the overall representation of women in radio. But women are still underrepresented in senior management, especially women from BME backgrounds. Helen explored this with Rebecca Frank, KISS Network content director, and Lorna Clark, BBC controller of pop music.
but it was actually when I reached sort of that first stage of leadership as being an exec producer, suddenly in slightly posher meetings, suddenly getting pulled to sort of different parts of the BBC, when there weren't many people that were female kind of in those scenarios. And it really was only at that point in my career, a good sort of 10 years in, that I felt my gender. You can sometimes flip that, and sometimes it's kind of quite alleviating because you can be that sort of breath of fresh air and cut through the BS, and it's quite refreshing and quite empowering. But yeah, it was only really at that point when I really sort of felt like that, but absolutely finding that kind of less and less. And you know, there's so many amazing women at sort of BOW that I'm bumping into, but there's definitely kind of not enough in that leadership sort of position.
I think being a successful leader requires you to be authentic. So that means I'm very in tune with who I am, which is a Black woman born in London doing what I'm doing. And it's still the case that you can walk into a scenario or a room and you're literally the only person that looks like you do. Sometimes that's an advantage, frankly, but sometimes you do have to knock the monkey off your shoulder saying, who do you think you are, what are you doing? And just kind of get on with it.
Delving a bit deeper with Lorna, how do you deal with self-doubt?
I assume half the people are as scared as I am. I mean, yes. Seriously, the thing you learn really quickly is that I haven't met a senior person who doesn't have some kind of whiff of imposter syndrome at some point. And I think it's pretty healthy. And the other thing, it's like most things, it's almost like a muscle. The more you use it, the better you get at managing it. What you can't do is be having this wrestling match with yourself going, no, I mustn't have that. It's perfectly natural. And now I am more comfortable in putting myself in a new scenario where I may not know everyone and I may not know everything, but you just remind yourself why you're there. And you realize it's not about being scared. It's about you actually asking yourself, did you do your prep? Yeah. You know, do you know what you're about to talk about and what is it you want from this?
It's refreshing to hear that honesty, isn't it? How do you feel then if I say the word networking? The audience raised it a few times. Some love it, some break into a sweat at the thought of it, but it is one way to progress. So how do you get comfy with it and make the most of it? I like this way of repositioning it from the chief exec of the Radio Centre, Siobhan Kenny, and encouragement from the chief exec of Ofcom, Dame Melanie Dawes.
One of the attributes that I think is the key to success in any field, which is being curious. And, you know, that's what I always want to see about anybody who comes through the door in my organisation is, are you curious? Do you really care? Do you want to have a chat with that person over there, even though they do something that's not remotely connected with what you do? So if that's where you start from in your head, then it's not networking. I'd like to talk to Dee Ford just because she seems really interesting and clearly she'd feel the same way. So I think it's about the way you position it to yourself, really, rather than anything else. But it's about being curious.
I think at some point, as well as being curious, at some point you have to be a bit brave and put your head above the parapet if you want to be noticed and if you want to broaden your network and broaden your number of contacts. And I look back on the early years of my career and I would meet people who were interesting. Sometimes they were on a level with me, actually. It wasn't necessarily people who were all eminent and senior. And I could have followed a lot more up with a little email, didn't have email early in my career, or by going up and speaking to them at the next event I was at when they were there. And I was quite bad at that. You know, you sort of realise later in life that mostly people are, particularly if you want to try and have a bit of mentoring or sponsorship from somebody, getting that email from somebody asking if they can meet you for a coffee, you always say yes.
And I can count on one hand the amount of people who bother to follow up in a meaningful way. I don't just mean, hi, we met. Which is like, what do I do with that? But literally make the ask. If you've met someone, work out what is it you want. So is it that you want to have 30 minutes of their time for a one-on-one? Is it that you want them to introduce you to someone because it might help with a job somewhere? What is it that you want? And then hope that you get honest, you know, reply.
Makes you think about the follow-up emails you've not done. A final word then on being stuck and dealing with fear, that feeling of wanting to, I don't know, start a podcast or needing to send a follow-up email, wanting it to be so good that you don't know how to begin. Well, here's Ruth Fitzsimons. She's Managing Director of Podfront UK.
What's the worst that could happen? You take a new job, you don't like it, you leave. That is literally the worst that can happen. It's really not that bad. You might have learned, I hate doing that and I never want to do that again. Great, absolutely fine. But like, the one thing that fills you with pride when you move countries to kind of start a new career, or whether you kind of like start a blog, you start a podcast or whatever it is at least you feel a sense of, I did that. I did that by myself. And it's a real sense of satisfaction to know that.
All right, that's your lot for this week. Thank you very much for your ears. Thank you very much for downloading and streaming or whatever you're doing today and listening to the podcast. Thank you to everybody who took part, from Simon Ross, The Rossi Show. You catch him on Greatest Hits Radio Breakfast every weekday morning, of course. Thanks to Pete for being our guest host. Thanks to Sam for sorting out the audio from the Women in Audio and Radio event. And thanks to Laura as well for putting all that together. My name is Roy Martin. I'll be back again very soon.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionic Studio, the smarter way to make radio.
Travel news on the radio remains an important feature for listeners.
Tickle Trout intersection is a bit on the slow side at the moment. And if you're heading towards Liverpool on the M58, those lane closures near Skelmersdale will slow you.
And with an audio travel bulletin supplied by Radio Travel News, it continues to be an important element, not only for your output, but also for your income.
In the West Midlands, M6 heading south, just approaching Junction 7 at Great Bar. It's slow because of an accident early on today.
Radio Travel News bulletins are the perfect feature to be sponsored. They provide real-time relevant information to your listeners, attracting a premium price without any of the hassle to you.
The A12 is closed through Essex all day today for roadworks, and that is causing some queues. There is a diversion to follow using the
app. Our unbranded bulletins are reliably researched, professionally voiced, and delivered directly to your radio station via Dropbox. Using your own playout software, this audio update can automatically appear in your log within minutes of being recorded.
In the northwest, the M62 eastbound between junctions 11 and 12 at Warrington and Birchwood, there's been an accident that has closed the hard shoulder and lane.
We cover the whole of the UK, with regional bulletins available in a growing number of locations, and breaking news bulletins offered out of hours to all clients.
The M6 in Warwickshire is queuing on the northbound side. There's a lane closure there, 4 miles of standing traffic.
See more and sign up today at radiotravelnews.com. Radio Travel News, moving you forward.